This is CBS Eye on the World. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman joins. We've got a new contract for Astra to build a rocket. Bob, a very good evening to you. Remind me, Astra, I get lost in these very short, catchy names that the private companies take on. Good evening to you.
You know, John, there's so many rocket startups that come and go, and in a free system, you have lots that go, you know, so you can forget some. And Astra is one that came and went, and now it seems to be coming back. Astra had developed what it called Rocket One, a rocket that it was a very small rocket, and it did a few launches and actually got some payloads into orbit, but it also had some failures. And about 2 years ago, they said they were going to abandon that rocket and develop a more advanced version. So they were going to be out of the rocket industry for a while they developed a new version. The result of that decision was they almost went out of business. Their stock price, they had been on the public, they'd been a publicly traded company. Their stock price crashed. They were delisted. And they were on the verge of going out of business. The founder of the company, a guy named Chris Kemp, he partnered with several other people to buy the company back, buy up the stock and turn it private again. And it still did not look like this company was going to go anywhere. They then said they're going to focus entirely on a much smaller aspect of their business, building small attitude thrusters for satellites. Which is, you know, you can make money on it, but it's a much smaller component of the aerospace industry. Well, somehow Kemp has worked out a deal with the military. He has won a $44 million developmental contract with the Pentagon to develop his Rocket 4. This is the larger version of the rocket that they had abandoned. How he has managed to win this contract, I have no idea, but the company has now got money to develop a larger rocket, so we might see them come back to life. They say the first test launch of Rocket 4 is scheduled for 26. I don't think that date will happen, but nonetheless, this company might come back to life. That's kind of fun.
Well, Bob, we know that $44 million is pocket change in the Pentagon, so maybe this is an experimental program they've got. And it's a good thing to encourage startups that rebirth themselves. Now let's go to the old way of handing out money. What is NOAA, Bob? Remind us.
NOAA is the agency that for the last, 60 years has been providing weather satellites for television stations to give you bad weather reports. It's also done a lot of climate research, and it's also done that very poorly in the last two decades because they've allowed politics to interfere with what it's doing. They tamper data and so forth. Well, it appears that the cuts that are threatened coming from the Trump administration include not only major cuts to NOAA and its satellite operation, but it's also going to do a major shakeup of how it gathers weather data. It appears that they want NOAA to shift from building large geosynchronous weather/climate satellites in partnership with NASA, and instead to focus on buying weather data from commercial small sat constellations that are in low Earth orbit. They'll get the data much cheaper. They'll get it much faster. They'll be encouraging private enterprise. What's to hate? They also, this decision also indicates that NASA does, that the Trump administration does not want the partnership with NASA to continue because it appears it's not been efficient. It's been interfering and making actually things cost more for no real gain. And it's not NASA's job and it shouldn't be doing this. So that's where we stand. I don't know if this will actually happen because once again, the politics, you're going to have a lot of the general press screaming, we're all going to die if we change anything. But I think the change is actually a very good one, and it should be pushed through because NOAA has not been doing a very good job. And a shakeup is needed to clear house here because there's a lot of people in these climate-related agencies who are not trustworthy scientists. They're more interested in the politics of their theories than they are in getting good data. And we need to get them out of the house.
And we go to private space again. iSpace's resilience. And you told me that I remembered this, but I didn't until you reminded me. Where's it been, Bob?
Yes, Resilience was launched in mid-January on a Falcon 9 rocket, on the same launch that put Firefly's Blue Ghost into space. Blue Ghost was a lunar lander. Well, Resilience is also a lunar lander. iSpace is a private Japanese company, which also has offices in Europe and the United States, and their focus is building lunar landers. They launched one previously called Hakuto R1, and that failed to successfully land. They got close, but they didn't succeed. This is their second attempt to Resilience, and I've got a map on Behind the Black so you can see where on the moon they hope to land. It'll be near the northern part of the near side of the near hemisphere. They launched in January. Blue Ghost landed, did its mission, and closed down. Resilience is still in space because it was taking a very long-winded route to get to the moon to save fuel and weight so that it could get there for less money. Private enterprise trying to be efficient. In this case, time is costs nothing. It's better to spend more time to get there and save money in building the spacecraft. And so it has now completed all its orbital maneuvers between the Earth and the Moon, and its path is now set heading towards the Moon for lunar insertion, orbital insertion. It'll enter lunar orbit in the first week of May, and then sometime in the next week or so, it will be then sent down to the surface to try to soft land. It's got a mini rover, it's got a bunch of payloads, almost all private. This company is trying to demonstrate it can do this because it has contracts with both the Japanese government as well as NASA for later lunar landers, and it's got to demonstrate it can make it work so it can get those contracts and make money. And so that's what this is going on, John.
And Viasat, that's also private. What is it?
Yeah, Viasat's though an old big space satellite company, geosynchronous communication satellites, been around for decades. It's been struggling the last few years because of the competition from Starlink and SpaceX. Well, it has now won a contract from the European Space Agency to build a communications constellation of satellites that will orbit the moon. This is to provide communications. It'll also do ground stations on Earth to provide the communications. And this is in conjunction with the United Kingdom Space Agency. And it's also part of the ESA's project to try to develop lunar resources. What's good about it is that it is private enterprise being asked to do the job. And for Viasat, it's good because it gives them some a business product that they can make money on that doesn't compete directly with SpaceX and Starlink.
Do we know what they're going to use for getting up there? Boosters, probably SpaceX.
Oh, well, that's an interesting question, John. But, you know, the launch is a few years in the future.
Sure.
They have European launches they can depend on, and they're going to probably want to favor European launches, but they'll take what they can take when the time comes. They've got to get it up there. And so we'll see how that plays out.
The price is right. All right. Now, this I'm most interested in. China is changing a schedule. How so, Bob?
Yes, so China has perhaps back in 21 proposed its major project to establish a lunar base on the moon, as well as planetary exploration to Mars and beyond. And in 21, they announced a whole bunch of missions, including a partnership with Russia having a whole bunch of missions. None of those missions occurred on time. All these missions were supposed to occur by 25. Some are now scheduled for 26, 27, 28, 30, and so forth. The delays are not something to be critical of. That's not unusual for this kind of work. It's hard. But they have now made it clear that they are trying to push some of those delayed missions forward to get them off the ground so the delays won't be as much. And that includes their Mars sample return mission. They had been talking about trying to get it launched by 2930. They now say their sample return mission will launch in 28. This is still years behind when they originally said they were going to do it, but they're trying to push it so it'll get off. Their plan is essentially almost identical to how they brought samples back from the moon. So that means I think there's a very good chance they'll succeed in getting more samples back when they do this. Whether it'll happen in 28 is another story. They've also announced that one of their lunar landers with a rover that's going to go near the South Pole, they've moved its launch date up till 29. And this is once again a delay from when they originally planned to do it, but they're trying to push it forward. Bottom line, though, in all this is that They are now admitting that their plan to establish a lunar base by 2030 is unrealistic. They basically admit this if you really read between the lines. They're now talking about these two, the several lunar missions are the framework for their lunar base, which they hope to establish by 2035 and be more extensively developed in the 40s. So they're really recognizing that having a few missions here and there, including the manned mission, is not building a lunar base, and the capabilities for doing that are not there. As I've been arguing now for the last 6 months, I think we should let them have their stunts on the moon. We don't need to beat them to do this. We've already been there. We should be focusing on developing a very viable, aggressive space industry in low Earth orbit with space stations, with interplanetary vehicles, with rockets, all the different things that we need to have a viable aerospace industry. Once we've done that, we will zoom past China's top-down Soviet-style government stunt program, which won't really establish anything permanent.
Being a student of Bob Zimmerman, I agree with Bob Zimmerman, except Bob. I puzzle. The Mars sample return launched by NASA that includes Perseverance and Curiosity, everything, the whole thing we have, is now stuck because of the expense and, as I understand it, not complete commitment to how they're going to get those samples back that are waiting for us. How is it that the Chinese now can propose a Mars sample return? What do they do different? Why is it? Is it cheaper? Is it?
It's very simple. The Chinese they planned a very basic sample return missions to the moon, following similar plans that the Soviets used for unmanned missions to do this. And it's not tremendously difficult. It's difficult, but it's something. If you're planning a basic thing, just get it done, just get some samples back, make it as simple as possible. They were able to successfully do it twice, one on the near side and the far side of the moon. They were able to do it. All they've done is taken that essential engineering that worked on the moon and upgraded it for going to Mars. And in a sense, that's a very smart upgrade, scaling it up for Mars. So it made it very simple. NASA didn't do any of that. NASA created a program that was very complicated, Rube Goldberg, that involved numerous entities, including Europe, United States, multiple companies in the United States, NASA. Totally Rube Goldberg in every single way and makes it very complicated. For example, just to give you one thing, China isn't going to pick up core samples. They're going to go. Its lander is going to have a scoop and a drill right at the spot. It'll get some samples, and then it'll take off. What do? We send Perseverance to collect core samples and dump them on the ground. And so somehow we've now got to figure out how to pick those core samples up. And so it makes it much more complicated. And they sent Perseverance without having figured out how to pick up those core samples. And that's why there's a problem right now. And so, yes, that's exactly how they can do
we
it.
We still don't have a budget for the Mars sample return. Is that correct?
That's correct. What we do have is a budget that exists that's several billion over budget. And without having to figure out a way to do it, it's gone over budget by several billion. So it's a mess. It's absolutely a mess.
All right, quickly now. Malaysia. Two states in Malaysia, which is a small part of the tangle of islands that are also connect to Indonesia, but they're bidding on a spaceport and working with China. Now, do they know that China drops the Long March 3 on people?
They might not. They might. Doesn't matter. To be very clear, there are two different states in Malaysia that are now researching whether they can get a spaceport in their states, and they're coastal. Located. So it does it. If they launch rockets from this, they're not going to dump it on anyone's head because they're going to be flying over the ocean. That's the idea. And these two states are now doing it. One of the states, they announced this plan back in January. I reported it then. They're working with the Ukraine to develop the spaceport and the concepts. This new report this week is from a different state in Malaysia that wants to work with China to study putting in a spaceport on its coast. What I find interesting about this, John, is that the urge to have spaceports is large, which means there's a lot of money to be made, and everyone's chasing those dollars. Having China work with Malaysia, I don't think Malaysia might not be worried about it, but from the United States' perspective, it's going to be difficult to work with the spaceport because you know China's going to be hovering over there to steal technology, and that's not good.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're chasing Lucy.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.